Good afternoon and welcome to this press conference following the Foreign Affairs Council of Defense. The HRVP will be giving you the outcome of today's Foreign Affairs Council and we'll be taking a few questions. HRVP, you have the floor.
Good morning. Today was not the Foreign Affairs Ministers who deserve a rest after four meetings in a week. Today he convened the defense ministers, because at the end, in practical terms, and once the political decision was taken yesterday, is a matter of defense policy, and it's up to the defense ministers to implement these measures and to use this funding. The first purpose of this meeting was to assess the evolution of the military situation on the ground, and the military staff of the European Union have provided us with a value assessment of this situation, gathering all the intelligence information that the Member States contribute to our assessment and awareness of the situation. Certainly, the military campaign, the Russian military campaign, is becoming more and more ruthless, and the Ukrainian armed forces are fighting back with courage. Kyiv resists, for the ones who said that was a matter of hours, the fall of Kyiv. This is not the case. Kyiv is resisting, Mariupol is resisting, Kharkov are resisting. There are a lot of civilian casualties, and the flow of exiled people, don't call them migrants, please, the flow of people looking for shelter, escaping the war, is increasing, especially in the Polish border. We got the figures of all member states who have a border with Ukraine about the flow of refugees. I insist, don't call them migrants, please. In this situation, our support for the Ukrainian armed forces is crucial. Crucial. They need ammunition, the new healthcare material. They need the defensive purpose arms of any kind. And we are going to provide them together with the member states, adding up to the efforts of some member states the resources that we decided to mobilize yesterday from the European funding. And everyone agreed on that. So member states are determined to increase their military support on a bilateral basis to Ukraine and to top up this effort with the funding of the European Union, in order to repel the unacceptable action by Putin, who is implementing this aggression to Ukraine with the support of Lukashenko, who, by the way, is organizing today a constitutional referendum in a context of oppression and widespread human rights violations. He's organizing a referendum to delete the Belarus non-nuclear status from the Constitution, and to make Belarus a basis for the nuclear weapons of Russia. Everybody will understand the importance of this decision and the dangerous escalation of the conflict when Russia is putting in high alarm, high alert duty its nuclear missiles and its fleet in the Pacific and in the Baltic. Well, in order to be coherent, we will further strengthen our sanctions package against the Belarus regime and all those who cooperate with the Russian military aggressions against Ukraine. As I said yesterday, we adopted an unprecedented support package under the European Peace Facility to help Ukrainian armed forces to defend Ukraine's territorial integrity. And this was done in a record time. I started working on this proposal after the European Union Council immediately after the European Union Council, I started thinking that enough was not enough, that we could do more. And after the Foreign Affairs Ministers, when we decided finally to put Putin on the list and Lavrov on the list of sanctioned people, but we were not able to decide on the financial measures related to take SWIFT, Russia out of SWIFT, we start thinking that we should be doing more. And immediately we start preparing this decision, which in one hand mobilized resources to help military to Ukraine, which is, as I said yesterday, a turning point on the history of European integration. Because until now, it was considered that the European Union, which is a peace union, not a military union, was not allowed to supply arms to a third country. That's what we are doing now. This is another taboo that falls. And secondly, and tomorrow at the Parliament, we will discuss about it, that the ministers have been informed about the decision that will put a strong toll on the Russian economy, because to cut half of the reserves of the Russian Central Bank is going to be very damaging. But today the defense ministers work a lot on the coordination of the efforts in order to make effective all bilateral initiative together with our funding. And we have created a clearing house to keep track of the Ukrainian request in one side and their needs and our F office, member states office, in order to ensure maximum effectiveness and coordination of our support. And in doing so, this cell, this clearinghouse cell, will be working in coordination with NATO. Ukraine has been asking also support for geospatial intelligence. And we are mobilizing our satellite center, which is placed in Madrid, to work on that. So I think that from the mobilization of resources, everything is on track. It has to be done quickly because the war continues. The war cannot wait for bureaucratic procedures. And I think that our answer and our overcoming of the institutional difficulties has been quick and showing a new era in our relations with Russia. And one of the things that the European Union has to do is to decrease as quick as possible its dependency on oil and Russian oil and gas. We pay a very high bill to Putin, and this money is being used to finance its military aggression. I want also to differentiate between Putin and Putin's regime and the Russian people. We are sure that the Russian people don't want this war. It is a war started by Putin and by Putin's regime with a clique of oligarchs who are supporting him. And we are strongly convinced that one of the best ways of fighting is to fight against the black money issue from corruption that supports the people who support Putin. And on the measures taken yesterday and approved by legislative procedures by the Commission at the proposal of the Commission and the High Representative, an important package of these measures are addressed to fight the money that these people, these oligarchs, have on the, in our banks and our financial systems. And I am very happy to know that Switzerland has joined us on the implementation of this package, because without the participation of Switzerland, our measures would have been not as much effective as needed. But that's a very good news that Switzerland joins the efforts of the European Union to fight financially and to fight against corruption and to fight against the dark money, the black money of the oligarchs who are supporting Putin that are being targeted by our sanctions, and they will continue being targeted by our sanctions. We'll talk later more about how to fight against corruption, because corruption is part also of the challenges we have to face. We are also worried about the situation in other countries of the neighbourhood, mainly Moldova and Georgia. And I am heading for Chișinău on Wednesday to meet with the Moldovan authorities and meet with Ukrainian people who have been forced by Putin's aggression to leave their homes and look for help, for shelter. They are in need of assistance in Moldova. But Moldova is mainly one of the countries in which we believe that the Russian pressure can be increasing on the coming days. Also, in the Western Balkans, as I announced on Friday, I decided to mobilize the reserve of the Althea operation. And up to now, 500 men and women will reinforce this force on the ground. And I thank the countries who will be providing this reinforcement of our capacity to control the situation in, through the operation Althea. I think it's a prudent and proportionate sign of our determination to maintain the stability at Bosnia-Herzegovina and face possible destabilization activities by Russia in the Balkans. All that shows that we have been able to react quickly and in unity. All that shows the importance of advancing towards the adoption of this strategic compass that when I presented was a way to stress that Europe needs to awake from the security and defence dimension, that our efforts on security and defence has to be more evident. From this point of view, I welcome the decision by Germany to take important steps on increasing their defence capacities. But the increase on defence capabilities of the member states of the European Union has to be done in a coordinated manner, because altogether our defence expenditure is four times the defence expenditure of Russia and equal to the one of China. But certainly we cannot say that it's equally efficient. So we have to spend more, but overall we need to spend better. And Europe is the framework in which this increase on the efficiency of our military expenditure has to take place. We have no other choice but to stand together as European Union in support of Ukraine, keeping in mind that it's not just supporting the Ukrainian people, it's also supporting our security and also the stability of the world. This is going to have a price. This is not a free lunch. Sanctions will backlash. Sanctions have a cost. And it's better to express and to explain to our public opinion that this is the truth. But we have to be ready to pay this price now, because if not, we will have to pay a much bigger price in the future. I think it's important to face that with determination and realism. We are turning a page on the history of the European integration and also in the history of Europe in the post-World War and in the post-Cold War. The relations with Russia will no more be determined by trade, believing that trade will make a political transformation of the regime. We want to support the Russian people. I am just recording a message, another message to the Russian people. We don't want to fight with them. We want just to defend Ukraine first, and a way of living after, in front of the Russian aggression. Well, I am wrong saying the Russian aggression. It's better to say from the Putin aggression and the Putin regime aggression, which is antithetic with ours. Values, and that's why we are standing behind the people of Ukraine.
Thank you, High Representative. And now I will take questions, and I have quite a lot in the room and remotely. I will start by Yuri.
not many questions because it's 4 o'clock.
Thank you very much, Nabila. High Representative, I have questions, of course, on the support to armed forces of Ukraine. Can you tell us a little bit more what was discussed today of what will be delivered to Ukraine? And, for example, will there be missile defenses? Because we see that Russia is using missiles to attack also Ukrainian cities and civilians. And the second question, can you tell us also, was it discussed how to deliver this aid to Ukraine? We know that there is a land border, of course, with EU member states, but as Russia has these missiles, like Iskander missiles in Belarus and is using it, so how to protect this delivery of this little aid to Ukraine so that Ukraine can use it. Thank you very much.
Mire, I'm going to speak in Spanish because it's more natural for me to answer this question in
our
Spanish.
Interpreters,
you know?
I wouldn't understand it.
You need to...
Do you know what does it mean? Mire, estamos en una guerra y no voy a dar ninguna información que pueda servir a la parte a la que nos enfrentamos. Comprenderá que no le voy a contar a usted con pelos y señales por dónde y cómo va a pasar la ayuda que vamos a proporcionar a Ucrania. Estoy seguro que Rusia estaría muy contenta de saberlo. Hoy las autoridades rusas han dicho que considerarán que la ayuda que la Unión Europea va a dar a Ucrania constituye un acto inamistoso y que atacarán a cualquier persona o cualquier entidad que transporte esta ayuda hacia Ucrania. Por lo tanto, va usted a permitir que no le dé ningún detalle que pueda serles de utilidad. Sí le puedo decir que, naturalmente, pasará por aquellos países que tienen una frontera con Ucrania. Pero eso supongo que no es desvelar ningún secreto. Y en cuanto a la clase de material, ya le dije ayer, y repito, que se trata de material defensivo, armas y municiones de todos los calibres que les permitan defenderse de la agresión.
Okay, merci. Now I go to the colleagues remotely, and Thomas has raised the first hand.
Oui, merci. C'est Thomas Miglierina de la télévision suisse. Je peux vous demander de commenter en français la décision du Conseil fédéral de s'aligner sur les sanctions de l'Union européenne. Et deuxième question, plus ou moins au même temps, le ministre russe Lavrov a décidé d'annuler la visite de demain à Genève. Il a cité, je regarde les tweets de la mission russe à Genève, le ban. Donc les sanctions, la fermeture de l'espace aérien de l'Union européenne. Mais est-ce que les restrictions s'appliquent aussi aux vols diplomatiques? Merci.
My French is not excellent, but I will try to say in French.
Vous avez un français impeccable, monsieur le représentant.
Non, non, écoutez, d'après ce que je sais, le gouvernement suisse a décidé de s'aligner complètement avec les sanctions européennes. Il va faire exactement la même chose que nous. C'est très bien. C'est parfait. C'est une mauvaise nouvelle pour la Russie. Mais du point de vue de l'unité du monde, disons, occidental, et du point de vue de la applicabilité, de l'efficacité de ces sanctions financières. Par exemple, tous les actifs qui soient déposés dans la Banque centrale suisse, je ne sais pas s'il y en a ou pas, ou combien, ils seront gelés. Et ça ne servira de rien aux oligarques de transférer ces actifs en Suisse, puisque Suisse va faire exactement la même chose que nous. C'est une très, très bonne nouvelle. Et la deuxième question,
c'était sur...
Ah, non, 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 non. La sanction permet parfaitement à M. Lavrov de voyager à Genève. Il y a des exceptions diplomatiques. On n'a pas pris la mesure d'interdire à M. Lavrov de voyager à Genève pour des raisons diplomatiques. Si c'est pour des vacances, non.
Is this Naomi? Yes, please, you have the floor.
Hi, thanks very much. And Naomi O'Leary, Irish Times. I have two quick questions, if I could, High Representative. The first one is about cyber attacks. Can you confirm any cyber attacks of Russian origin? For example, we've had a major attack on Toyota, as one example. The second question is about hidden assets. In every harbour of the Mediterranean, there are mega yachts proudly flying the flags of tax havens, where their ownership is concealed by shell companies, and many of their owners are Russian oligarchs whose names are very well known. How will we identify the ownership of those? Will they be affected? Will they be seized? And what about cryptocurrencies? Are there any steps taken, given the design of crypto, to be peer-to-peer and to evade regulation? Thank you.
No tengo conciencia o información de ese ataque concreto al que usted se refiere contra una empresa en particular, pero ha habido ataques cibernéticos contra varios ministerios en Ucrania, contra varios medios de comunicación en Ucrania. Naturalmente que Rusia lanza ataques cibernéticos, no tengo constancia de esta última, pero Ucrania nos ha pedido ayuda para defenderse de los ataques cibernéticos que sufre y sufrirá, me temo, y naturalmente eso formará parte de nuestra ayuda. Los activos ocultos de las personas que son objeto de las sanciones que hemos aprobado estos días tendrán que ser localizados y una vez localizados tendrá que actuarse contra ellos. Yo no me voy a pasear por todos los puertos de Europa buscando los yates de los oligarcas, pero tenemos células que lo van a hacer.
Jean-Pierre, tu avais demandé la parole.
Bonjour, monsieur le représentant. Une précision par rapport à des propos que vous avez tenus hier sur le fait qu'on allait octroyer à l'Ukraine des avions ou des avions de chasse. Est-ce que vous pouvez nous donner quelques détails? Quels pays vont donner ces avions? Et par qui seront pilotés ces avions? Est-ce que les pays qui les donneront à l'Ukraine s'engageront dès lors dans le conflit? Et donc il y aurait une présence européenne dans le conflit, on suppose que ce n'est pas ça. Donc on est un petit peu troublé par vos déclarations, ça peut être bien de les préciser. Merci.
No se preocupe, con los 500 millones de euros que hemos movilizado, aunque quisiéramos, no podríamos movilizar muchos cazas. Que no se sabe usted cuál es el precio de un caza, ¿no? De manera que no estamos hablando de lo que decidimos con nuestros fondos, pero que ciertamente pueden, algunos países europeos, pueden, si quieren, bilateralmente movilizar toda clase de ayuda, porque ciertamente Ucrania para defenderse necesita también medios aéreos y eso forma parte de las peticiones de ayuda que nos ha dirigido. Pero tendrán que ser aquellos países europeos que dispongan, si disponen, de cazas que puedan ser pilotados por los pilotos de la Fuerza Aérea Ucraniana los que tengan que hacer que instrumentar esa ayuda.
Merci beaucoup. Can I take another question?
If it is easy, si es fácil, sí.
Thomas, your question is easy or no? And fast.
Tomasz Bielecki, Deutsche Welle, Gazeta Wyborcza. Yes, it would be easy. I was going to ask about fighter jets, but answered. So, Hayrab, you've mentioned also yesterday about the Poland serving as a hub for this military help, EU help for the Ukraine. And today ministers decided, as you said, on creating the clearing house. Is it the same? How did it work? How many people and where geographically it would work? Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
No, una cámara de compensación es un instrumento financiero. No hace falta moverse de Bruselas para instrumentarla. Una clearing house es hacer un matching between ofertas y demandas. Eso se puede hacer perfectamente con un teléfono y una hoja de papel. Es decir, quién pide y quién da. Y no dar dos veces lo mismo, no dar cosas que no se necesitan y dejar peticiones sin atender. ¿Entiende? O sea, Ucrania está planteando peticiones. Hay 27 países que las están atendiendo. Se trata de hacer de manera que nos coordinemos a la hora de atender las peticiones de Ucrania y no dejar ninguna sin satisfacer, evitar duplicaciones y carencias. Pero eso se hace aquí, con un ordenador desde Bruselas. Otra cosa, naturalmente, es transportar todo el material, porque claro, está muy bien decir, aquí hay dinero, sí, pero con dinero no se combate, se combate con armas, y las armas tienen que estar allí donde se combate, y por lo tanto hay que transportarlas. Eso requiere una logística física, no de paper, una logística física muy poderosa y muy importante que tendrán que organizar los Estados miembros a través, ciertamente, de aquellos Estados que son fronterizos con Ucrania. Pero permítame que después de lo que he oído que decían algunos responsables militares rusos, no les dé más detalles. Y ahora sí que...
Okay, so...
A ver, la última pregunta. Seamos amables Lorenzo. Con la prensa que hace su trabajo.
Muchas gracias. Lorenzo Consoli, Oscar News. Hi, representative. I will appreciate your answer in Spanish because your Spanish is beautiful. But I ask it in English because my Spanish is not as beautiful. We are now in an escalation, a clear escalation with this military answer from the EU. The first time it happens, military support for the Ukrainian. My question is, how can we keep energy out of this? It's clear that for the Russians now, energy could become a way, I mean, cutting energy, a way to damage the EU, because we have 40% of our energy coming from Russia. So how can energy remain outside all this? Thanks.
The energy will not be out of this conflict. Like it or not, we have a dependency on Russian oil and gas. We are going to decrease this dependency as quick as possible. And this is an existential policy to decrease the dependency, which has been increasing, by the way, in the last years. 4 years, we have been talking about decreasing, and we have been increasing. Well, that's time to decrease, seriously. It means renewables and hydrogen. Very much. But it's going to be turbulences on the markets of energy. It's easy to understand. It will happen. It's happening. And it will increase prices. And prices will be paid by consumers. Maybe we can introduce subsidies, policies to protect the most vulnerables. But we are in a situation in which, and that's what I was saying at the beginning, our actions and reactions against Russia will have economic consequences. And we have to be prepared for that. Don't believe that we can do whatever we need to do without having consequences. Look at the consequences that the Ukrainian people are paying. They are paying a lot of consequences. They are resisting, and thank God Zelensky is not the kind of the leader that escapes hidden in the car. No, he will stay there resisting. And we have to support him. And it's going to have a cost. And if we don't pay this cost today, we'll pay much more tomorrow. That's clear? Thank you.
On this note, I would like to thank you very much, and thanks to the interpreter, and I'm sorry for all those who I couldn't take questions from.